They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners, to Magellan's at the Movies podcast. I am your host, Nathan Mogulyans, and I'm joined, as always, from our Kansas City branch by my co-host and co-brother, Elliot Mogulyans.
It's great to be here.
Elliot, yeah, it's great to have you, as always. Always a joy. Yeah, Elliot, you wanted to talk about a show that you've been watching recently, do some discussion of this, and then I'm gonna, you know, do a little segue to talking about our movie. So, what show have you been watching, and what are your thoughts on said show?
So I've been watching The Penguin. You may have been hearing about this show in the news lately, because it's pretty buzzy right now. If you didn't hear about this show, welcome to your first day on the internet. You may want to leave after you're done here, because there's not much worthwhile. But The Penguin is a spin-off show, spinning off The Batman, and it's pretty self-explanatory. It's about The Penguin, as portrayed by Colin Farrell. And I personally loved The Penguin in The Batman. He's one of my favorite parts of the movie. So I had no problem with this. I wasn't, like, chomping at the bit for it. But I was decently excited. And, man, it's really, really good. Like,
oh, wow.
I've seen all three episodes that have been released so far. Each one of them has been excellent. There's a lot of... I mean, it's working with fairly simple characters and characteristics. But the way that it's formulating them is extremely compelling, especially... There's this one character, I won't spoil anything, spoiler free, in case anyone's worried. But there's this one character who's kind of caught in that classic push and pull between his better instincts and his, right, demons. And I don't know, it's just a combination of the writing and the acting that makes it really compelling when in a less... skillful hand or a worse show, I think this character could easily become just an annoying sideshow. But yeah, it's really good. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to episode 4.
Wow, that's good. Maybe I'll watch it. Dang, you're really selling it. If you want more of our thoughts on Colin Farrell's performance as the Penguin in The Batman, you could check out our review we did of the film. That's good, though, that the show is good, because to pivot to my piece of banter, DC needs a win, because Joker 2 is getting eviscerated, absolutely torn apart. I think 1 week after Megalopolis gained, I think, one of the worst audience scores on a lot of different websites, Joker 2 gave it a run for its money. So I have not seen either of these movies. I decided I would rather save my money and just watch them at my leisure later when I can do it for no money. But yeah, this is very bad for Warner Brothers. They needed a win. They've been doing it really poorly. I don't know if you've seen all of the movies they've lost money on this year, but Warner Brothers desperately needed a cash cow, and this movie is not it. But I think starting next week, I think we should be getting into the good stuff. I want to say Saturday Night comes out next week, which I'm incredibly excited for. Every positive review makes me more excited for that. Yeah, we're about to get into the weeds, the best part of the year, the brutalist I think, has a release date now. I'm getting more and more excited for that movie the more I see it talked about. And yeah, it's shaping up to be an interesting fall film season.
Yeah, man. Deadpool and Wolverine really came in clutch for Disney when they were in the middle of a not-so-stellar year. And I feel like Warner Brothers still needs that last-minute rescue in order to pull them out of this funk that they're in, where they make consistently the worst possible decisions in handling every single one of their major properties. Like the way that DC has been mishandled, it's one for the history books.
Yeah, no kidding. Holy cow.
But surely, surely James Gunn is the man to bring it back.
Yeah, uh-huh. Anyway, enough about that. Let's address the business that we're talking about, which is related to Joker Folie à Deux. We're talking about the original Joker, the 2019 smash. It made over $1 billion. I believe it's still currently in, at the very least, the top 10 highest grossing R-rated movies of all time, if not the top 5. It was critically beloved on release. It won 2 Oscars for score and actor. It was nominated for a host of other Oscars, I believe 8 or 9 in total. And yeah, Elliot, you picked this movie. What is your history with it? Why did you pick it? You know, break it down for us.
All right. I was going to do like a little bit of hip-hop rap, break it down, but I decided the world isn't ready for my musical talents.
Wow, thank goodness.
So yeah, my history with this movie is I first saw this movie in theaters with my best friend. I specifically went to visit him because we were really into the DC movies back in the day. So I specifically did not see it with Ryan and Dad and Nathan. And I waited to go see it with him. I saw it on one of the biggest screens in the country, which is kind of a waste because, sick. I mean, it's a good-looking movie, but I don't know. If it's not like seeing Interstellar on the biggest screen in the country, which would be insane. But anyway, I really liked it the first time I saw it. I was like, yeah, Joker, let's go. And then I liked it every time since, but then there came a time, I think maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, where I kind of stopped watching the movie with the regularity that I watch some other movies. And I started thinking about it more and more and being like, well, is it that good? Is it? And then the absolute death knell for my assessment of this movie came when I finally watched for the first time The King of Comedy, which, if you didn't know, this movie borrows liberally from King of Comedy and Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
And I thought the King of Comedy was fantastic. And I was like, oh man, Joker is really just a not good version of this. But I still hadn't watched the movie in a while. So I was like, Joker 2, it's in theaters. People are talking about it. I'm interested to hear evaluate it as I am now. I'm interested to hear Nathan's thoughts, so let's do it. And yeah, I love Joker, the character. I think he's a fantastic villain. He's one of my absolute favorites. And he's been in some incredible stuff with some incredible performances. Obviously, you've got Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. That is top tier. But also top tier, I think, is Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill's a great Joker in Batman the Animated Series and the Arkham games. So yeah, I have a lot of love for this character and this property. And I also really like character studies and grim, depressing movies. So this movie has a lot going for it. But I have to say, watching it again, with all of the context that I have, with my kind of having matured a little bit more, I think this movie is strictly mid. I think that it looks great. Props to the cinematographer, whose name I will look up while Nathan is talking shortly. Dude, the score for this movie, unbelievably good. I listened to this score casually. It is fantastic. Absolutely earned by Hildur, Gonad daughter? Something like that.
Yeah, good luck, bro. It's a tough name.
Well, great job, Hilly. You really cooked on this one, as the children say.
Wow.
But I think that this is a really, I just can't stress this enough, pathetic Joker. Like, if this guy actually challenged Batman, I think he would get his butt kicked in like 20 seconds. I feel like this movie just totally mishandles and misunderstands the character and the root of his appeal. So I don't like it as a Joker fan, and just on its own merits, taken as just a movie about a guy who happens to call himself Joker, I still think this movie is very sloppy at times in its characterization, in its world building, in its writing. There are just like shortcuts being taken and things not being properly explained. And you end up with a movie that, yeah, is just really struggling to get there for me. So I'm interested to see what happens here. Nathan, last week when I asked you to rate your excitement for Joker 2, you gave it a 9. So clearly this is something that you're really fond of, a property that you... the director that you support and are fully committed to. So why don't you explain to us your deep attachment to Todd Phillips?
I have none. I have no attachment whatsoever to that man. I had a pretty similar experience with this movie to you, that I think when I first watched it, I enjoyed it a fair amount. And that enjoyment has gone down every single time I've thought about it and every single time I've watched it until we get to where I am now. Where I would go a little further from than you. I would not say this movie is mediocre. I'd say this movie is bad, is not very good, is missing huge chunks of things that I would say are necessary for a compelling film. And I think it is really, really egregiously poorly written, both in dialogue and in terms of story. And I think it's a movie that will have little to no lasting impact in the cinematic landscape. I think it, much of its original acclaim on release came from easy comparisons to other superhero movies that, you know, it was rated R. It was clearly being made by a more talented team of technical people than a Marvel movie has. Elliot already mentioned the score, which I agree is fantastic. And Joaquin Phoenix is clearly a much more high pedigree actor than you would typically see in a superhero property. Not counting some. I'm not saying every actor in a superhero property is bad. I'm just saying Joaquin Phoenix is not Chris Pratt, which is, I think.
Whoa.
Chris Pratt. Look, I'm not trying to come up here and make enemies. So anyway, I think the movie was very positively received because it was being compared to superhero movies, and I think the reception to Joker 2, as well as people going back like me and rewatching Joker 1, I think the reception to that is going to be very negative because they'll be comparing it against the breadth of cinematic canon, which, like you mentioned, Elliot, has two movies that this movie is virtually identical to. I mean, I don't think it's a one-to-one sort of thing. I think he's stealing quite a bit tonally from them, and certainly there's some sort of plot lines in King of Comedy and Taxi Driver that are reminiscent of plot lines that are in Joker. I don't think it's a one-to-one copy. To be honest, I think it would be way, way better if it was a one-to-one copy of either of those movies, and I don't even like Taxi Driver that much. So, I really did not enjoy watching this movie, and I'm ready to, just tear it to shreds. Absolutely be very mean about it.
Wow. All right. So, before we begin, I just want to go ahead and dismiss out of hand any potential counter-arguments for things that are maybe logically inconsistent or that we just don't like of, oh, well, Joker is just an unreliable narrator. I don't care. I don't care if this entire movie never happened. Todd Phillips should hope that I never conclude that, because if I concluded that the entire movie never happened, then I'm going to say, why should I care about any of this? So this is the movie as it's presented to us. I don't even think that Joker is really an unreliable narrator here. Is there any implication that he's like making stuff up? I mean, we get the whole thing with the girlfriend, not girlfriend, but that's like the only indication that he's, I don't know.
Well, and I guess, to actually talk substantively about this, this is one of the things that when I first saw the movie most irritated me, that the ending seems to play the entire movie with a sense of ambiguity, that the ending is kind of unclear as to what exactly caused Joker to be where he is at the end of the film. And then certainly the ending makes it seem like the ending paired with the scene from earlier where we see that he was in fact in Arkham Hospital before the events of this film seems to imply that some or all of the movie could be just a delusion that Joker has. But even if that's true, in my opinion, the function of ambiguity in most movies, not in every movie, but in most movies, especially a movie like this, would be to draw us into the world of the character and to kind of make us want to solve it, right? Like trying to figure out what is real and what is fake. If you think of something like Mulholland Drive, which is famously a bit of a puzzle box of a movie, that there's lots of different ways you can interpret it and lots of different avenues you can go in terms of viewing it as to what the intention of Lynch, of the director David Lynch, was with certain scenes in certain moments. So in my opinion, ambiguity should be something that draws the audience into wanting to solve something. And even if all or some of this movie is a delusion outside of what we're explicitly shown is a delusion, such as when he's dreaming that he's on the Murray show at the beginning, or the sequences with his girlfriend, like you mentioned, I feel no compulsion to try and rewatch the movie and figure that out. And the ambiguity does nothing to improve my enjoyment of the movie. I've never seen an interpretation of the movie that I felt was very compelling, that was playing with the ambiguity of delusions in terms of like spelling out like, oh, these scenes are real and this is how you can tell. I've never seen an explanation like that where I was like, whoa, this was written by a genius. My sense of the ambiguity is this is written by someone who's just trying to throw things at the wall and hope they stick. And in this case, he's throwing ambiguously leaving open-ended questions around with no sense of, in my opinion, having a clue what the answers to any of those questions are. You don't have to always have answers, but if you're just pointlessly bringing up questions, why should I care? If you didn't even care to think about it, why should I?
Well, my whole thing is that if substantial portions of this movie didn't happen, then why should I care about them?
Yeah.
I mean, in a very literal sense, they did not happen, so it doesn't matter. We're just like, it's like, we're just basically watching a character dream journal, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. And I don't give a fart about that. So I don't know if there's a way for me to enjoy some kind of like implication that the entire movie hasn't happened. I mean, I didn't like it in American Psycho. Don't really like it here. But if there is a way, it is not to be found in this movie. Especially since it telegraphs some of the most important reveal, quote unquote, of what's a delusion is so telegraphed. I mean, I think we may have mentioned this before, that I am the ideal mark for a twist in a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I just believe and accept 100% what a movie tells me. And then for the rest of the movie, I'm just like, yep, all right. Any conflicting information, any like hint that the movie is giving me that there's a twist coming, I will just completely ignore. So the reason I say that is to tell you, the audience, how telegraphed the reveal of the girlfriend being a delusion is, that I was expecting it. Of all people, I was like, there's no way this is actually happening. And if it is actually happening, then she's a useless character because she's not really doing anything or saying anything of note. And I still think that even that contributes to a problem of like, it feels like that should be this huge gut punch, just knock the feet out from under the viewer's moment. But because she's been such a nothing character and she's exchange like 30 or so words with Joker/Arthur, I was like, wow, that's crazy, man. The woman who he went on like 2 dates with wasn't actually real. I didn't get the sense that he had lost something like truly foundational to the kind of person that he was, or the mood that he was in, because she's barely in it. So that was a real— That moment was really fumbled for me this time around. Like, even when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's a little weird. She hasn't even done anything, so why is this such a big deal? But now, later on, I think that it's quite poor.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that, because I completely agree. Every scene with Zazie Beetz has no function. And this is where it is borrowing very liberally from Taxi Driver, because much like Taxi Driver, a lot of this movie is pointless meandering while I wait for something to happen.
Wow.
I'm not a huge Taxi Driver fan. At least that movie is mercifully short. This movie's 2 hours long.
It is, it's lengthy. But, so, I want to take a step back here and talk about this movie as an adaptation of the character Joker. Because if you'll cast your mind back to our 100th episode special, we had a question of the merits of tinkering with established characters and worlds in adaptations. And my answer was that I don't really see the point of doing something like that when you could just make a different movie. If you want to make something different, completely different to a character or a world, just make that new different thing. And that absolutely holds true here, because there is vanishingly little about Arthur Fleck that is anything more than 100% superficially related to Joker, the character, as he exists in our minds, in the comics, in the canon that he's sort of established around himself. Like I said, this character is in no way, shape, or form intimidating. Like, Batman would have this guy in the hospital in like 2 seconds. He wouldn't even be a monster of the week. He would just be like a side character. And I think that's a problem, because Joker, the character, is so much made on his intimidation factor, on the fear of like It seems like he could do anything at any moment. He's intelligent. The description for this movie on HBO Max, or Max, whatever it's called, says, like, Arthur Fleck becomes a criminal mastermind. And I was like, does he? It doesn't seem like much of a mastermind to me. And that is a problem for an adaptation of Joker, who is a criminal mastermind, who is a very intelligent, who's not just a physical threat, but an intellectual and ideological threat. That Joker has this kind of warped, nihilistic worldview that makes him so compelling in movies that do him well, like The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
So obviously in this movie, the situation is a little bit different because you don't really have a antagonist, so to speak. In this movie, he would be the antagonist, or a foil for the character.
Yeah.
To kind of show us the other side from that. So I understand that there's a little bit of inborn or built in. There you go. That's the word. There's a little bit of built in disadvantage when it comes to that. But still, I feel like at the end of this movie, Joker doesn't really have an ideology, or he doesn't really think differently to the way that he thought beforehand. Like, he was, as he says multiple times, I only have negative thoughts. I haven't been happy one day in my life. Like, he's not really changed at all by the end of the movie. He's kind of just indulging himself. Mm. And indulging in a lot of self-pity, and a lot of whining that I did not find particularly engaging or compelling. He doesn't really come out of the movie as this, like, nihilistic force of nature, of just pure malevolence that Joker is and is supposed to be. He just ends up as kind of like your bog standard mentally disturbed spree killer, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who just feels like the world owes him something that it really doesn't. That's an exaggeration. Obviously, he's owed respect and dignity, and it would be probably in everyone's best interests if his counselor had not been fired. But even there, Joker doesn't really apply that, take that and apply it to some kind of coherent, holistic ideology. It just kind of makes him mad. So he's not really motivated by anything bigger than his own personal hang-ups, which I think isn't necessarily a problem for just a movie about a guy descending into madness. Take Falling Down, for example. That's pretty much what's happening to the main character in that movie, and I think it works there. I think that movie's a lot better written than this movie, so that is something that goes for it. But for Joker, I don't think that works. I don't think that that's not really what you want from your supervillain, is it? To just have them be kind of mad at things that happen to them, which, and I'm gonna wrap up very soon here because I could tell that Nathan has some things he wants to say. I do think that, again, even if we separate the Joker character and all the DC elements from this movie, I still think that Joker or Arthur Fleck comes across as being fairly banal as a character, as an antagonist, as a potential super criminal. Like, the things that happen to him are things, many of which, not all of which, but many of which, I was like, dude, why is this such a big deal for you? There's the girlfriend that I was like, you had like 2 dates with her. What is your problem? There's learning that his mother isn't his real mother. But again, it doesn't really seem like he gives a fart about his mother. Like, he does kind of seem like he likes her a bit. But I didn't really get the sense that he loved her, that caring caring for her was anything more than an obligation for him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I was like, dude, why is this a big deal for you? Why is this the thing that is motivating you to cast off your shackles and go around killing people? So I think that this movie fails as an adaptation of Joker big time. And it also fails to a lesser extent, but still pretty substantial extent, as a character study of just a guy who's going crazy and becoming a murderer. Although, again, he's just a spree killer. He's not really a serial killer. It just kind of kills people when it's convenient or when it gets mad.
Yeah. I was just going to add that I fully agree with everything you said. And I think at the heart of kind of some of these issues that you're talking about, I think the movie doesn't have a philosophy or any sort of idea that it's trying to communicate. And I kind of liked when you said, like, oh, he feels like the world deserves him something, but it doesn't. That the movie hates the character of Joker. The movie goes out of its way to make him seem pathetic and emasculated, and the movie works to undercut a lot of his big sort of moments when he's doing the Travis Bickle, are you talking to me? Are you looking at me thing with his gun. He accidentally fires it when he says the like cool line to the cops, and then he runs into the door. The movie wants us to think of Joker as like a pathetic loser. And at no point does it do this to try to create some feeling of like sympathy towards us. It does it seemingly, in my opinion, to try and get us to hate him, which, and I don't want to keep up bringing, well, I don't feel that bad about continuing to bring up Taxi Driver, because if Todd Phillips didn't want me to bring it up, he should have made a movie more different than Taxi Driver. I think one of the few good things that I can say about Taxi Driver is that the movie does have compassion for Travis Bickle. It doesn't have a ton of compassion, but it does make us want to care about this person's plight. That the movie does see it as a bit of a tragedy that this person is unable to interact with society in a way that's healthy or productive, and that he's, you know, facing all of these challenges. Whereas Joker feels like it wants us to hate him. It almost feels like the movie agrees with Thomas Wayne that, you know, Joker is just a pathetic, self-pitying narcissist with delusions of grandeur, which I think makes the movie lose any sort of resonance that it could have in a lot of different areas. I struggle to think of what this movie is even trying to say about anything. It doesn't feel like it's saying anything about mental health, because if it was trying to say that we need more mental health resources, maybe don't make your protagonist someone who is unequivocally a danger to themselves and others. Like, Joker doesn't need mental health resources. He needs to be put in an asylum. Like, he needs to be put in a hospital or some place where he can be receiving more serious help. So I don't see how the movie can be about that. There's protests in the background of the movie about the populace being very angry at the rich, but it's such a vacuous, like, protest. It's just like, oh yeah, we hate the rich. And again, because our only window into this protest is Joker, it genuinely feels like the protest is just, hey, we're angry, we don't have more stuff, as opposed to a lot of the legitimate complaints people can have about rich people in the real world. Like, the movie's so bereft of any sort of political ideology or any ideology at all that it feels like the movie is just a bunch of, you know, vacuous nonsense, that it's just a bunch of generic things that happen in society in the hopes that someone will latch on to some of these pieces and make the movie about something more than it actually is. I just don't see how there's anything intelligent or meaningful being said about society or anything in this movie. And again, I don't like Taxi Driver. I don't really enjoy Taxi Driver. I think it is a painfully, painfully slow movie. But at the very least, I can admit that Taxi Driver is about something. The Taxi Driver is trying to impress an idea of a plight of a certain type of person that obviously, given, you know, how long the movie has existed as a cinematic classic, continues to resonate with people and continues to be a relevant, poignant thing. This movie has none of that, and is another reason why I don't think it's going to age well at all, because people are going to rewatch it and they're like, this is about nothing. The only thing that's interesting is that they made an R-rated, artsy-fartsy superhero movie at a time when everyone else was just making CGI globby superhero movies.
Yeah, I very much did not care for the whole clown movement aspect of this movie this time around. And I think that you hit the nail on the head with the term vacuous here. Like, what exactly are these people protesting? They have this one camera or shot as if it's part of a newsreel where a guy's like, this is about us being clowns. It's like, F the rich, F the whole system. And that is such a nebulous non-statement that I was like, okay, but what specifically is happening here? Are they seriously just mad that Thomas Wayne had this little gaffe where he called them clowns? Because that's lame. You should have thicker skin than that. But like, is Thomas Wayne and the rich, are they somehow worsening the crisis? Are they like, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. What relationship they have to this nebulous crisis that the city is in. And I think that you have perfect evidence of this when Joker, at the climax of the movie, when he's on the Murray Franklin show, and we're going to talk about Murray Franklin in a minute here. Believe that. Believe you me. He's on the show, and he says, like, if it was me dying on the street, you'd walk right over me. And I was like, okay, wait. Why does he think that? Has there been any evidence presented in the movie of a, like, societal disregard for people on the lower economic rung or people like Arthur? Like, we do have a little bit in that the city has cut funding for mental health resources. But again, that is very non-specific. And then Joker doesn't really seem to care about that much. Like, he doesn't really like his counselor. Mm-hmm. He thinks that she doesn't listen to him. So if that's supposed to be this, like, Genesis moment for him, then it really needed to be something that he actually, that was actually helping him. Something that was actually kind of acting as a check on his worst impulses. Because in lieu of that, there's nothing for us to latch onto. There's no reason for us to believe him when he says if he was dying on the street, they would walk right over him. And I think this is also related to a problem that the outrages that Joker is subjected to throughout this movie feel very contrived at times. Like, he just gets attacked by random flipping people who have just, for reasons unknown, decided to attack him. Like, at the beginning, he gets attacked by a bunch of children. And I think that might be an example of the movie trying to imply that that didn't actually happen, because Hoyt says, a bunch of kids stole your sign, that doesn't make any sense. And I was like, you're right, Hoyt, that doesn't make any sense, that is very stupid. But I'm not, it never comes up again, so I don't know. And look, maybe Todd Phillips is just too smart for the likes of me, and he pulled the wool over my eyes successfully. But I don't think that's the case. I think that that probably, something like that actually happened. And yes, that's very stupid. And worse than that is this time that is kind of this Genesis moment for Joker when he's attacked by these three, I don't know, stockbrokers or something.
Yuppies is the term, Elliot.
Yuppies?
Yup.
He's attacked by three yuppies who are just like, They are such movie bullies. Like, they're right. It's the kind of thing that only really happens in movies, where characters are randomly possessed by such an overwhelming need to be the biggest jerk face they can possibly be at a random moment to facilitate a character moment. In this case, Joker killing people for the first time, ostensibly in self-defense the first two times. I mean, obviously he executes the last guy, which he didn't really need to. But the first two times I was like, hey man, you could probably get a jury to call that self-defense. But it just feels very contrived to have. Yeah. It feels very much in storytelling, there's this thing called and then storytelling, which basically refers to, or wait, is it the other one? Am I thinking of?
No, you're right. It's and then.
And then. Where what happens in the story should all kind of proceed from, each event should sort of proceed from the one immediately before it.
Mm-hmm.
That creates a sense of consequentialism, that mm-hmm. these things are happening because people are making them happen. These things are all connected. But and then storytelling just introduces random things in order to facilitate narrative development. And that's what these three yuppies are. They are, and then Joker got on the subway and there were these three guys who happened to be there who decided, oh, we're going to flip and assault someone. That's how terrible we are, because he's laughing a lot, which is A, ridiculous, and B, contrived, because it is random. There's no, it just happens because that needs to happen in order to send Joker on this little journey of madness.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it's not like we want Joker to turn to the screen and start just like espousing things, or we want some character to just start monologuing about the specifics of the protest that they're embarking on. But there are other movies that are able to very, very clearly invite the viewer into a philosophy or into thinking about societal issues in a way that is fairly specific. I mean, to bring up another classic men behaving badly sort of movie, Fight Club is another movie that I'm not like over the moon about, but I think Fight Club is very clearly espousing a philosophy and has very specific issues that it has in mind, that it makes very clear through the course of the film. This is the issue that the characters are dealing with, if that's, you know, feeling like they can't be emotionally vulnerable with other people, materialism. That the movie brings these ideas out, and they're very specific things that anyone watching can very easily say, oh yeah, I've had experience with that, or oh no, I've never, you know, had that sort of thing of, you know, trying to deal with that issue. Whereas Joker, I already said, I would struggle to point at anything specific that Joker is highlighting in society as an issue or as a thing that he needs to deal with. Like you said, Elliot, it doesn't seem like his therapist was doing anything. So the idea that if the mental health services weren't cut, that would have prevented any of this from happening seems fairly ridiculous, in my opinion. And yeah, most of the movie is and then storytelling, that Joker just keeps on coming up with stupid side quests to go and see Thomas Wayne in a bathroom, go and figure out whether or not he was adopted, go and none of which feels like it has any consequence, because, and this is the other thing that really annoys me about this movie, I'm pretty sure the guy at the beginning of this movie could have shot three guys on a subway. I think the only thing that makes Joker a killer is he's given the means to do it. He's given a gun and he's given the ability to, you know, do it without anyone seeing it. And then later in the movie, he's just given a gun. But there's very little sense, in my opinion, of any sort of progression. That anything that happens to Joker is pushing him further over the edge. Which, again, is something that it has in common with Taxi Driver. But, again, is done slightly better, if only because it's shorter. I don't have to spend, you know, 5 minutes watching him climb into a fridge for some reason, as if that has any bearing on anything.
He thought that there was a nuclear strike impending on Gotham City, so it was like, I know what'll handle that.
Wow, that's funny. I feel like we're talking... I have very few things to say in more specific sort of things. In terms of the performances, I have never been a huge fan of Joaquin Phoenix's performance in this movie. I think there's portions of it that are okay. I think it's criminal that Leonardo DiCaprio didn't win Best Actor for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood the year that Joaquin Phoenix won. For this movie, I very much dislike when actors just get to be weird and then get awards for that, as opposed to genuinely embodying an interesting or compelling character. And yeah, I think I mentioned already that I really dislike the writing in this movie. I already mentioned that, you know, the general plot I don't think is very good. The dialogue, there's lines in here that would make Nietzsche blush. I mean, there's so many ludicrously dark and needlessly edgy lines that feel like they were written with the intention of ending up on a 14-year-old boy's Facebook post with, you know, the Heath Ledger Joker, where it's like, all I have is negative thoughts. Society has abandoned me. Which, again, you know, 14-year-old boys, they be going through some stuff. I was 14-year-olds once, and I'm sure I would have felt very seen by some of these lines. But as an adult, it's just so ridiculously corny, and I cannot... And there's so many of them. I mean, I should have started counting a tally every time I rolled my eyes at something Joker said. Because, again, it's so ridiculous, I feel like my only option is to... not take his issues seriously, because that's such a ridiculously overblown and overdramatic thing for a person to say.
No, I think you're right. I think this movie has a real problem with feeling very manufactured, of like calling direct attention to like, oh man, look at this. And just to circle back for a little bit, I'm just spitting up ideas out of nowhere here. Like, say Thomas Wayne was buying up cheap housing apartment buildings and then increasing the rent so he could get everyone evicted and tear them down to build something new. That is a concrete act that demonstrates a lack of care for people like Joker and gives the protesters something concrete to protest. And like, again, that's just off the top of my head. It's not
as well
hard.
I mean, that's a legitimate thing. Currently, the reason why house prices are so high, not to get political here, is because corporations are buying up a lot of cheap housing to use as, like, Airbnbs and stuff. So, like, that's a legitimate, cogent, societal, actual point that would have real-world implications. And presumably, I mean, throughout history, people are going to, you know, try and screw over other people in terms of housing. So that would continue to be relevant. That's a great idea, Elliot. Good job.
Well, oh man, the other thing is, I wanted to talk again about, I am kind of saying the same thing here, about the moment that you mentioned where Joker goes to see, we're calling him Joker, his name's Arthur Fleck, where Arthur goes to see Thomas Wayne, who may or may not be his father. It is a little strange because, again, Thomas Wayne says he didn't know her, he didn't sleep with her, and then Joker also has this picture with Love Your Smile, TW, on the back of it. So I don't know what I'm supposed to conclude from that. Again, if it's not happening, then I don't care, because it's not happening. And I don't care about things that don't happen. Sorry. But anyway, like, just Thomas Wayne is such an egregiously over-the-top jerk that it's not it doesn't make me feel sympathy for Arthur. That I'm just like, okay, that is insane. That someone would be possessed by such an unreasonably aggressive rage at that point. Like, it makes a little bit more sense when he realizes that Arthur is the person who came to his house. And I could understand a father being mad that some wacky guy was forcing his son to smile. But before that, he's just so rude. And I'm like, dude, this is just, it's just trying way too hard. And also, this isn't really a problem. This is just like me being a Batman purist here. But Alfred would not be so rude to someone in need.
That's so
Alfred
true. Yeah.
Alfred's character is defined by his kindness and his warmth. He would not be such a jerk to Arthur.
Well, and honestly, even Bruce seemed like he already has some like weird mental stuff going on. Because the way he reacts to a strange man sticking his thumbs in his mouth is not how I think a child would react to that.
Well, if that child was growing up to be Batman, I don't know.
Maybe he would.
Maybe he would. But yeah, that was just a little thing that bothered me. I was like, that's not Alfred. Come on. Alfred's a nice guy.
Yeah.
In terms of performances, I have absolutely no problem with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood being deprived of every single piece of awards medal that there is to be had. That movie is trash.
It's so good.
The very fact that it was up for an Oscar, I think, is a real miscarriage of justice. I wrote the UN Crimes Against Humanity Court about it, and they just did not care. But anyway, I think Joaquin Phoenix does fine. I probably wouldn't have voted for him for Best Oscar, but I think he is good. And I can see the thing that's truly upsetting is that there are moments where I can see not even the foundations, but just like the individual pieces that you would need to build a good Joker story. Like, I think that his laugh, that's not bad for a Joker laugh. I think that his costume, that's a great look for Joker, with the makeup and the red suit and stuff. Love it. I think that everyone else is kind of constrained by this constant need to be as bellicose as humanly possible at all times. So I feel kind of bad for them there, because I'm like, there's really not much you can do. Hoyt, there's really not much you can do here, because you're just such a jerk off that there's no room for subtlety. So I feel bad for his actor and Thomas Wayne's actor and stuff like that. I do want to say that I think that Robert De Niro is not phoning it in here. I think, and he is working with some very poor material. Like, this would be the worst late night talk show in America. These jokes are pathetic.
Well, I don't know if you watch much late night TV recently.
I guess I haven't. So maybe that's right. But I just wanted to say, I appreciate that he's not phoning it in, because this is clearly not his usual type of movie. Is a comic book movie. So I liked him. And I honestly liked the moment when we finally did have a foil for Joker there at the end. And he was calling him out on his BS and saying, like, man, this is so much self-pity. You seriously think that just because you're sad, that gives you the right to kill three people? No way, man. And I was like, finally, we have a little bit of conflict. And that is the important thing of not having a foil for Joker, is that we then lack conflict. Internal conflict and external conflict. Obviously, I mean, Zazie Beetz, dude, what are you going to do with a character this paper thin? I mean, you may as well not even try. You just pick up your paycheck, man, and then get out of there. But at least she facilitates a nice little reference where Joker says, I had a bad day. And I was like, that's cute.
Good ref. I understood that reference.
I understood that reference, yeah. The last thing that I want to say is, dude, the gulf between the quality of this movie and the quality of its score is like, it's like bigger than the Gulf of Mexico. Because, oh baby, this is a good score. I'm not even going to waste time describing it. Just like look up the track Bathroom Dance on Spotify or YouTube, and you'll immediately know what I'm talking about. I mean, it's so unique. It's like nothing I've ever heard before in a movie. It just nails the tone perfectly. So, Hildur, fantastic job. I've heard that, again, she's on the score in Joker Folia Do when they're not singing, I don't know, Frank Sinatra songs or something. And it's, again, very good. That's honestly the one thing that might tempt me into seeing this movie in theaters, is being able to hear the score over the speakers. But it's a lot of money to pay for that. But yeah, fantastic score. And also, I totally forgot to look up the cinematographer. I'm going to do it right now. Not right, Joker Folia Do.
While you do that, I'll do my final thoughts. I agree on the score.
IGN gave this movie a 10 out of 10. Wow.
That's a crazy score to give this movie. I mean, even when I liked this movie a lot, I still only gave it like an 8 out of 10. Yeah, the score is amazing. The score will trick you into thinking some of these moments are better than they are. I think if the score wasn't in this movie, I genuinely would dislike it way, way more. The cinematography, you said you liked it. I think it's okay. It does very little for me. The camera is moving way more than I think it should sometimes, in a way that's very disorienting to me. It makes me unhappy. I feel like this is the kind of movie that needs a lot of static shots and a lot of, it needs Martin Scorsese. It needs to look like a Martin Scorsese movie, and there's only like two scenes in this whole movie where it feels like a Martin Scorsese movie, which are, they do one classic, although very short, kind of Martin Scorsese tracking shot where it's behind him as he's going into his boss's office. But again, it's incredibly short. So yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the cinematography. Pretty much all the other technical elements, they're okay. I don't know. This movie really irritated me, because I just can't find any avenue to get into really enjoying it. Like, I haven't really mentioned it, because you've taken up most of these things, but I very much agree that this is a mediocre art house movie, not even a mediocre, a bad art house movie with fairly meaningless trappings of a superhero film. I think when I first saw it, I was like, wow, this is such a neat reinvention. And now I watch it and I'm like, wow, this is such a stupid non-reinvention. Like, Joker's just a loser. And yeah, all of the comic book sort of references and things, even the Waynes getting killed at the end of the movie, it feels like a half-hearted shrug, where it's just like, yeah, I guess we gotta do this.
That is so wild that they did that.
That means there's like a 30-year age gap between Batman and Joker.
Well, it doesn't really matter, because Todd Phillips, and I'm gonna go on a tangent here, that Todd Phillips is like, oh, maybe he's not even Joker. He just inspired the real Joker. Can we just stop with that? Because they did it in Gotham. In the one season of Gotham,
great show
that I watched, they did it here. And then Matt Reeves, I want you to pay attention here, because I heard you say maybe it's just like proto Joker. No, that is stupid. Can we just knock that off and just have like Joker? We don't need to have Joker be part of this like lineage of being inspired by someone else. That's dumb.
What if it, at the end of The Penguin, like, it turns out that Oswald Cobblepot has a twin, and we were just watching the proto-Penguin this whole time?
That would be funny.
That's what I think is especially...
His name actually is Oswald Cobblepot.
We don't do this.
His name is Oswald Cobb, apparently.
That's so lame. Yeah, they should do that it's a proto-Penguin. But we don't do this with any other character, where it's like, oh, this is just the proto version of this. That would be ludicrous. The proto Mr. Freeze? That's idiotic.
This is just the proto Red Skull. The real Red Skull comes later.
The real Red Skull. Yeah. Anyway, I'm ready to rate this. I don't have much to add. The score genuinely might be the only thing about this movie that I like. That in general, the movie irritates me. It is way too self-serious. It is so self-important in a way that irritates me. Every aspect of it felt like it was designed to just annoy me with what it's doing. And I, again, send us an email. If you think I'm way off and you think Joker is saying something deep and meaningful about society, I would love to hear the avenue by which it does that, because I am at a loss trying to look at it and figure it out myself. So I'm going to give this movie a 3 out of 10.
Dang, that's rough. Well, so the cinematographer's name is Lawrence Scherr, and I would have to disagree, Nathan. I think this movie is very well shot. I think that a lot of it comes from very good shot composition, that everything is staged very well. The shot of Joker kind of like smiling ruefully at Zazie Beetz. Does she even have a name? Zazie Beetz.
Woman?
Woman. Smiling at woman in the elevator. I was like, oh, that's a nice shot. I just think it's very well shot. The score is fantastic. I've talked myself down a little bit here. Really? I do think, this movie does fail at a lot of stuff. It fails as an adaptation of Joker, the character. It fails as a character study of this kind of person. And what we're left with is someone who's not charismatic, who's not intimidating, who's not smart, who's not scary, which also means intimidating, and who I just have very little connection to because of how contrived everything is and how nebulous it all is. And I really could not care less if this is supposed to have not happened or anything, because I don't care if things don't happen. Todd Phillips wishes that I, or hopes that I don't think that this movie didn't even happen, because that renders the entire thing pointless. I'm going to give it a D+.
Wow. So recommendations. I took a bit to come up with this one, but I'm kind of happy about it. It's another movie about a person wronged by society who sets out to fix the injustice that they see through morally questionable sort of means, although I would say less morally questionable than what Joker does. And this is a movie that I think has a much stronger point. It is talking about a very specific type of society's ills. That is Emerald Fennell's Promising Young Woman.
Interesting.
I know, but didn't expect that, did you?
No.
In this movie, I can't remember the name of the main character. I want to say her name is Cassie, but Carey Mulligan's character is, I don't want to give away too much about this movie, but the movie is very much speaking to the way women are treated in society, more specifically the way abuse of women is treated or not treated in society. I think it is such a clever movie. There's so many little details of so many different layers of subversion that I love. I'm a huge fan of subversion in cinema, especially in genre sort of cinema. And I think this movie is just so fantastic. At every turn, it's trying to make you think about this specific problem and how the words you say and the actions you take either feed into or ameliorate this sort of situation that these characters find themselves in. And I think that is such an interesting concept for a movie, and the movie continually goes further to try and push you to really think about something, which I think is a great thing about a movie. It's not for everyone, you know, not everyone wants to sit and think about, you know, their role in society's ills, but I don't think it's a bad thing for every now and again to watch a movie where it's like, hey, maybe I could do a little bit better in some of these areas. So I'm going to recommend this. I think it's so good. Carey Mulligan gives an incredible performance. Fantastic casting. One of the movies that is really made by the casting in it. It looks great. It's super, super good. That's my recommendation.
Very interesting. I can second that recommendation. I like that movie. I don't like it. Well, obviously, I don't like it as much as you did. I did not realize you were that fond of it. But I like it. So, yeah, go ahead. Give her a watch. My recommendation is The King of Comedy. I said at the beginning that that was the movie that was the undoing of this movie for me. It's the good version of Joker. And the final monologue, Robert De Niro's final monologue, when he gets on the show.
Spoilers!
is just fantastic. It's really good. I really like it. It's a really good examination of someone who's clearly a little bit, who's having some kind of mental health problems. But the main character is very charismatic. He is very compelling. He's not intimidating because he's not supposed to be. But yeah, this movie's great. And if you're going to steal from the best. So I understand why they rated this movie for so many ideas. But yeah, if you want to see what Joker would look like if it was made well, I think that The King of Comedy will do it for you. You know what does it for me? Is knowing that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Wow. That's really exciting. That sounds like something Joker would say.
That's true.
You wouldn't get it. Life is hard and full of disappointments. Yeah, I can second the recommendation for The King of Comedy. I don't think I like it quite as much as you do, but I do agree. The ending is fantastic and is so. I think up until the ending, I was kind of like, yeah, this movie's kind of mediocre. The ending, I was like, okay, maybe that was a banger. Maybe that was pretty good. Because, yeah, I'm not a huge Robert De Niro guy, but I think he really brings it home. Yeah, next week is another special episode. So we are going to be continuing our journey through the decades of giving you a glimpse into our list-making abilities. We're going to be tackling trying to create the Magellans of the Movies top 10 movies of the 2000s, of the aughts. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. I've been having an absolute hoot rewatching some of these movies in preparation for this episode. It's always great to rewatch a movie that you really like, and then you rewatch and you're like, dang, that was really good. Like, I have great taste. That was stellar. So I'm really excited about that. Send us an email if you're upset. If your name is Todd Phillips and you're upset that we dissed your movie, send us an email. Heck, come on the podcast. We'll review some other movie and you can talk about
Joker 2.
Yeah, we'll talk about Joker 2. If you pay for us to go, we'll talk about Joker 2.
There you go. Open invitation, Todd.
Yeah. So thanks so much for listening. We're going to be back next week with that episode.